nerdnerd.com.
Impossible gaming, impossible gaming, these games are hard. Impossible gaming, impossible gaming, these
games really are hard. Impossible gaming, impossible gaming, these games are hard. Hard. They're hard. Right here on Impossible Gaming.
On Impossible Gaming.
Hey, welcome to the Impossible Gaming Podcast. Episode number, what is this now, three? We're in the third episode?
Yeah, number three. We can count.
Yeah, absolutely. One, two, three episodes. My name is Chadley. I'm your host.
And I am Tristan, as always.
Your other host.
Today, the other guy that nobody really cares about. It's the Chadley show.
Today we're gonna talk about various stuff that may or may not be bullshit. But we'll talk about as we go on. But of course, first we're going to start off. This is the Video Gaming Podcast. Link to our YouTube channel, Impossible Gaming. You can check that out at theunheardnerd.com. Now, Tristan, what you been playing lately?
Well, as it so happens, I have been playing Elder Scrolls Online, as I believe we both discussed in a previous episode that we were going to check it out, or you at least wanted to check it out.
Yeah, I definitely.
I now have. And let me tell you, I'm surprised at how well they've made the transition from a single-player Elder Scrolls experience to a multiplayer one. I was expecting at first for it to be much more or less kind of a WoW ripoff, you know, and to retain so much of that MMO style that it doesn't feel like an Elder Scrolls game. But despite the fact that it doesn't have nearly as much depth as a normal Elder Scrolls game, it still manages to feel enough like a real Elder Scrolls experience to pass the bill for me. I think it's well worth checking out. I have definitely run into some of the bad tropes that go along with MMOs, like fetch quests and repetitive stuff like that sometimes. But they keep that, I think, a little bit more masked than a lot of them do. It doesn't bog down the experience. You still feel like you're having, I don't know, more of an adventure than just go here, collect this, talk to this person.
And it's not like Skyrim and Oblivion were completely devoid of fetch quests. Those were, you know, present within Skyrim and Oblivion, but they made it seem so visceral in, you know, that you wanted to do the fetch quest. It wasn't just go and get this thing. It made you want to do that. And I'm wondering if Elder Scrolls Online holds that same sort of visceral experience.
It doesn't keep you engaged, I don't think, as much. But that's not necessarily to say that it doesn't keep you engaged at all. But it's just when you're designing an MMO, you're not going to most likely have the best single-player experience, and that's where your problem is going to lie, I think. If you're looking to be able to play on your own and feel like it's just as immersive as any other Elder Scrolls game, it's just not going to work for you.
Well, here's another one of my concerns as well, and this is just a question that I have for you. As someone who has not played Elder Scrolls Online yet, does the game similar, like, this is always, like, my fear when it comes to MMOs. I'm always worried that once the game becomes older, within a year or so, then the servers are going to be completely dead and the game's going to be unplayable. Would this still be playable if there was nobody in the servers?
As far as I can tell, yes.
Yeah?
Would be. It has more of a single-player-esque style and feeling to it than most MMOs do, but at the same time, some of the quality isn't quite there that you would expect with a single-player game. It's kind of what I'm getting across. I feel like it won't die out that fast, though. I feel like it's got a couple of years in it, at least, just because it's such a strong franchise. It's not pay to win.
There's no microtransactions or anything like that?
There are, but so far it's just for cosmetic items and for the most part anyway. So it's nothing that's going to, like, shatter the game if you're not spending extra money. It's a one transaction thing. You buy the game and you can play it.
If you
pretty much have all the perks anybody else.
If I got a PS4, would this game be worth the price tag? Is basically what I want to know.
If you don't like MMOs, I would still say stay away from it.
Okay, yeah, because I'm not a big MMO fan, but I really love The Elder Scrolls, and I love the idea of being able to play throughout all of Tamriel.
It is good in that they're representing more of the landscape, more of the story, but at the same time, like I said, it suffers from quality problems because it's so massive and it's for so many different people to be playing at the same time.
That makes sense.
You know, it's hard to feel like you're the lone hero when there's like 8 different people standing around you doing the exact same quest as you at the same time. It's not as immersive, but it's still good.
Yeah, and you know what? I think when I get a PS4, I think I still will get it, but I will be. I probably won't be as attached to it as I was, say, Skyrim.
I don't think you will be either. But
no.
That's kind of to be expected, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, with what I'm playing, I have a bit of a tale to tell. Okay, you ready?
All right.
So I gave Nintendo plenty of fucking chances. I was practically begging them to take my money. And they wouldn't do it. Year after year. Every E3, I'm like, are they going to take my money this year? And then they don't. So what I ended up doing was I went onto the fucking internet and I ordered a Game Boy Advance cartridge that was fan-translated of Mother 3. Because these assholes... they weren't fucking...
You bought an actual cartridge? Wow.
Yeah, I bought the actual cartridge, Game Boy Advance cartridge, and Mother 3, I'm about 20 hours into it right now, and it is... great. It is great. Now, when I first got the game, I had texted you and said, I think this might be better than Earthbound. I think I'd retract that statement now. I don't think it is as good as Earthbound, but that's mostly...
Few games are.
Yeah, and I think that's mostly because Earthbound was a bit more expansive, whereas Mother 3, because it's on a handheld, there's a bit more of a limitation to how big the world can be. Another thing about Mother 3... is that the story drives the whole thing, and that's what makes the game so incredibly good. And the fact is that the first 8 hours you don't even play as Lucas. You don't get to play as the main character of the game till about 8 hours in. You get to know a bunch of different characters, and they join you slowly throughout the game, and you're like, oh, I remember that guy, he was the guy I played as in chapter 2. And I really like it in that sense. It's pretty hard. It's pretty hard. Now, as I'm playing it, of course, like I said, it's a really great game, and I'm both infuriated and understanding in why Mother 3 was never released in North America. I'm infuriated because...
You understand it? Why?
Okay.
Okay, we'll get to that, I guess.
Alright, I'm infuriated because it's a great game, and I would have loved to have this game a decade ago. But I understand why it wasn't released in North America for a lot of different reasons. Number one, the Game Boy Advance was a lot more, at the time in Japan, it was a lot more, what's the term I'm looking for? It had a wider audience than it did in North America. In Japan, a lot of people had Game Boy Advances, and a lot of people had them in North America as well, but the bulk of people who had the Game Boy Advance were mostly kids. You know, like, they were kids who wanted to play games while their parents were on TV. And Mother 3 isn't really a game for kids. It's a bit deep. It's quite deep, and there's a story that I don't think a lot of kids would understand. It has a lot to do with death and the acceptance of death and the acceptance of, loved ones dying and things like that. It's quite dark. But another reason that I think it didn't come to North America that makes sense is that this game came out in 2006. You have to remember that at that time, Nintendo of America was heavily pushing the Nintendo DS, which had already been out for 2 years. So they were trying to move units of the Nintendo DS. If they released, a main storyline game for the Game Boy Advance, it would attract people away from their brand new console that they're trying to pimp. Whereas I think they probably wouldn't have had to worry that much about it in Japan. I don't know if you know much about Japan. I'm sure you do. But Nintendo handheld systems in Japan, they don't really need big marketing budgets because they kind of rule the coup over there. They murder. And so
they kind of still do here as well. But I get what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I think it's different now. Because at the time, Game Boy Advance that was a kid's console. Whereas the Nintendo 3DS, there's a lot more adults that own it, and that's why we can get things like Monster Hunter, Xenoblade, and Shin Megami Tensei 4, and that's why those kind of games work now. But, like, if you think back to the Game Boy Advance, like, the M-rated games that were released on Game Boy Advance, for instance, I don't know, Turok Evolution, they didn't do too well. In fact, they did hilariously poor.
Yeah, that makes sense, but at the same time, I feel like, if you're trying to build a solid fan base for a console in any area of the world, you want to be able to offer good titles to all the age groups, to all the potential parts of the market. And if they would have released Mother 3, I understand that obviously it's very late in the lifespan of GBA. It was dying, or already dead by
pretty well dead in North America at that point. Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's a massive sell. That's a massive reason why people would want to pick up a Game Boy Advance SP, which is something that had come out a year or two prior. Just to play that game. It was a game that people were already very, very amped up about.
But despite Game Boy Advances being on store shelves, that's not what Nintendo was trying to sell at the time. They were pimping the shit out of the Nintendo 3D or the Nintendo DS.
Well, okay, then may I suggest an even bolder solution to this problem? Maybe they could have just taken a couple of years, maybe in like 2009 or so, they could have released a remastered version for the DS.
Yeah, and they've actually done that in Japan now. They released Mother 3 on the 3DS.
Ah, so now we're out of excuses.
Yeah, at this point, yes, I think there is no excuse. But at the time, for 2006, I totally get why Mother 3 did not get localized in North America. At this point, I don't get it. I really don't. It should be in North American hands by now, whether that be on the 3DS. The 3DS shop or the Wii U shop or even as a 3DS game in itself. I don't know why. I don't know why it's not here yet.
But still, good game, you'd say. Very good game, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I'm about 20 hours into it. The game is devised of 8 chapters, and I'm on chapter 7. And like I said, I'm about 20 hours into the game, and I've been in chapter 7 for about 8 hours. So I think it feels to me like the first 6 chapters were introduction, and then they're like, chapter 7 and 8 are the real fucking game. Here you go.
Well, there you go, man. Sometimes that's the best way to do it.
Yeah,
build it up.
So at this point, even if Nintendo released it, they localized it, put it on 3DS, I wouldn't buy it because I already own it. I wouldn't see a reason to buy it.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't understand that, man. If there was an official North American release, I'd be all over that no matter what I had.
Yeah, but once...
But anyway.
You have to understand, too, as a collector, once that gets... localized in North America, what's going to be more rare, the version that they released widespread, or the version that you could only get on the internet as a fan translation? It's going to be way more rare.
But I don't know if anybody would want to pay for the fan translation anymore, though.
I guess, yeah, once there's an official translation. All right,
well,
I feel you.
We've gone really long on this what you've been playing thing.
I feel you. But we've got a few news stories to run through, so let's start through that. Now, this one is completely a rumor, and I think we actually even debunked it today, but it's still on the agenda, so who gives a shit? There's a rumor that Nintendo is remaking Pokemon Yellow onto the 3DS, launching in November. I've read it on a few different websites, but I've still yet to hear anything from Nintendo. It would make sense if Nintendo...
It would. They're saying it would be a 20th anniversary thing and yada,
absolutely,
yada, yada. Okay, it would be great. But the problem is, it's not on any reputable site at all. It's just drawing criticism already from people saying, oh, that's BS, and rightly so. Until we hear it from a reputable source, I wouldn't put much stock in it.
I think
it would be great to have that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would play the hell out of it, especially if it, as advertised, would have every single Pokemon in it, but you have to beat the Elite Four first. I like the idea of having all the Pokemon in the game, but you have to... But until you beat the Elite Four, you only get the first 150, Oh, excuse me. If it only get the first 150, I think a lot of fans would be pleased with that. I think a lot of old fans and a lot of new fans would be pleased.
They would be, but at this point, we can't say it's going to happen.
Yeah, we don't...
I can't say that for me it would be special because Pokemon Yellow actually was the first Pokemon game that I officially owned.
Me too.
I definitely mooched off my brothers who had Blue and Red, but I never owned one until Yellow came along, and I got that for Christmas, I believe in 1998. Was it 97 maybe?
It came out in 2000, so you would have gotten it in 2000.
Did it? Okay. My memory is bad.
Yeah, the original Pokemon games came out in 1998.
But I got it with a Game Boy Color for Christmas one year, and hell, that was one of the best Christmases I had.
I think you and I might have been plagued with the exact same thing where nobody wanted to mess up whose game was whose. So you had two older brothers, right? And they had Red and Blue. I had two older brothers. They had Red and Blue. And here I was. I wanted a Pokemon game. And my parents were like, fuck, we got to get this kid a Pokemon game. But if we can't get him the Red or Blue one, we've already got those ones. We'll get them all mixed up. And then Nintendo was like, oh, well, what about that? Look at this. It's a Yellow one. And
I mean, in my family, it's like if I was to accidentally pop in like my brother's Pokemon Blue cartridge and delete his game or something like that, that would cause a fight. So
yeah.
We couldn't have the same game.
I specifically remember
violence.
I remember when I was 6 years old, my brother had the game Pokemon Snap. You know this game, right?
Take
pictures of Pokemon, throw apples at them, piss them off.
Yeah.
Oak likes it when they hurt. Well, We lived in a different part of the country than we grew up in most of the time. We lived here for about a year in this one area of the country, and I accidentally erased his account, and I was so scared, so I hid it under a blanket. Well, apparently that blanket came with our house, so when we moved, we didn't take that blanket, and he's held it against me our entire lives. I've got two copies of the game now, and I won't give one to him, but every time he comes to my house, he's like, give me one of your copies of that
you
game.
You dick,
like,
you won't give him one?
No, dude! They're
you
mine.
Owe him that!
They both have my data! But let's just, for a second, let's just humor the idea of Pokemon Yellow 3D actually being a thing. Now, if this were a thing, I don't know how up on it I'd be. I mean, of course, I would be thrilled to play the game, but at this point, I feel like Nintendo's kind of going down this sort of strange path that I'm not super comfortable with, where they seem to have, and a lot of other companies are doing this as well, they seem to be focusing more on remastering games that they've made in the past than they are on making games. And
But you know what? There's a market for it. We were just discussing all that nostalgia we have. That's the reason why something like this would be good.
Absolutely, but like, for instance, they remade Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask for the 3DS. I love those games. They're great. I have both of the 3DS games. I've played through both of them. But given the option, I sit in my living room and I play video games. That's where I play a bulk of my video games, is in the living room. If somebody said, do you want to play the 3DS version of Ocarina of Time or the Nintendo 64, any day I'd go with the Nintendo 64 because it's the original game. That's what I have nostalgia for, not the remake.
But here's the reason why these remakes are happening so much, at least for Nintendo. I can speak for those games that you just mentioned. I think the reason why those are happening is because of the retro resurgence. Video games that are old are now being bought for high prices.
Absolutely.
Sometimes higher than new games. So why not try to capitalize on that newfound popularity and release those games again?
It's the same reason that Rare Replay exists, where they're re-releasing Banjo-Kazooie and Conker's Bad Fur Day, and like the PlayStation Network as well, and even the Virtual Console and things like that.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
But
I have no problem with it as long as they keep coming out with new stuff as well. So, for example, when Dark Souls 2 came out remastered, I wasn't mad because, of course, we already have plans for Dark Souls 3. Bloodborne had come out, so who cares?
Yeah, but, like, it comes to a point where you just kind of have to sit back and wonder, like, where they're putting all of their best resources. Of course, Ocarina of Time was already a great game, so they had 50... People are like, the remake of Ocarina of Time is better than the original. And I say, no, it's not. It only feels better because they took a look at something that was already amazing and put a fucking bow on it and said, this is ours now.
Yeah, but I mean, with that respect in mind, really, is that you talking through nostalgia to say that the original is better?
Absolutely. Well, of course it is.
Mm. Well, there you go then. So, I mean, if somebody who's new to it comes along and plays it on the 3DS first and then goes back and plays the N64 version, maybe they feel the opposite way.
Well, it's hard to say, too, because, like, with those kind of games, I like the original because it was the original. You know, I like the original because that was an original thought at the time. Ocarina of Time, there was nothing like it when it came out. It was amazing, but then when you buy the 3DS version, you kind of know what you're getting, and, you know, it just kind of is Ocarina of Time. It's a game that already pre-exists that you could buy on Nintendo 64, probably for cheaper on eBay. I think those run for about $35 these days. Rather than the $54.99 price tag that they put on the game.
But can I play devil's advocate once again here?
Absolutely.
Dark Souls 2 remastered, I appreciated it more when it was remastered than I did in its original form.
Okay,
I had played both.
I need you to sit down and explain this to me because that actually makes no sense. It's making me mad. Right now they're remaking God of War 3 and it's like, hey man, give it some time, you know?
Well, the thing that they did with Dark Souls 2 was they changed. Okay, the original creator of Dark Souls and director of the games was not involved heavily with Dark Souls 2 originally, so he kind of took a backseat and let this development team underneath him control and oversee the process of making the game. But with the remastered version, he kind of stepped back in and made alterations.
Okay.
That definitely made the game better.
Okay.
That's kind of where I'm deriving that appreciation from.
All right, I understand that. Now, going back to Pokemon just for a moment, if it is true that Pokemon Yellow is coming out this fall as a 3D remaster for the Nintendo 3DS, I have to wonder what really their expectations for Pokemon are right now, because they make a lot of Pokemon side games and a lot of remakes. We just got Pokemon Alpha, Ruby, and Omega Sapphire, which is actually, like, I will go against what I just said. I said usually the original is better. I think Omega, Ruby, and Alpha Sapphire is the only case that I can think of where I think the remake is better. But on that same token, are we just making remakes and side games now? Or are they working on another large-scale Pokemon X and Y type game? Or are they trying to figure out a new style and completely rework the way Pokemon works again because they saw how successful that was with Pokemon X and Y?
I certainly hope they're working on something new, and that's why I also hope that it is... In so many ways, I hope that this is, in fact, just a bunch of crap. And I think it is. I think it's false.
I think it might be. But you know, it would be cool. I'd play it. Pokemon.
So would I.
I'm a consumerist piece of shit. I may not like remakes too much. But like.
But you'll sure as hell buy one.
Here's what I find just so strange about the entire thing is that in 1998 we got Pokemon Red and Blue, and then we got a remake, Pokemon Yellow. Then we got a remake of the original games, Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green, and now we're getting a remake to a remake of a game that's been remade. Does that make any sense?
Well, potentially, and yes, it does make sense. Potentially, we could, but we're not likely to be getting that.
We're not 100% sure.
At least not right now.
We're not 100% sure. Now let's move on to the next bit of news. We got a new trailer for Minecraft Story Mode. Have you seen this trailer?
I haven't seen the trailer, but I've definitely read some of the fan reaction to the idea of Minecraft Story Mode.
You know what Minecraft Story Mode looks like to me, just based on the trailer?
What's that?
It's the fucking Lego movie with Minecraft characters. That's really what it feels like, a lot.
And what's your opinion on that?
Minecraft Story Mode could be really good. Now, I've played a lot of Minecraft. I'm not as much as some people. I don't know. I've probably put 15 hours into Minecraft, which, as far as Minecraft goes,
man, you're gonna get laughter from people.
Yeah,
who play
as far as Minecraft goes, that's minuscule as shit. But you know, I played it for a while. I got some fun out of it. And was like, all right, whatever. You know, I'm not creative enough to play Minecraft.
Yeah,
but
I actually never got into Minecraft. I tried playing it for about 2 hours, got bored, and that was it. But for me, looking into the story mode thing, it's interesting. It's great to see that they're trying to take it in a different direction. A lot of fans are already bashing it because they're saying, oh, well, this thing's not going to allow us to do whatever we want.
Yeah, well, who cares? It's called
story.
But you
already have Minecraft to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You already have Minecraft to do that. So what's the problem? They're just trying to expand their franchise, which is good, especially with – they're coupling with, I believe, Telltale?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's this can't be bad for Minecraft. It simply can't, in my opinion.
Now, they handed it over to Telltale, and here's why I think that might have been a mistake. I think that for Walking Dead, Homestar Runner, fucking what else have they done? Game of Thrones. I think their format works for those games, but Minecraft has an open world experience and like the feeling of you can do whatever you want, whereas with point and clicks at any given time there's only like one or two things that you can actually
do. Yeah, but I mean this is what those fans were complaining about, but here's what I say to that. My counterpoint is this is a completely different thing. Yes, it bears the Minecraft name, but Minecraft already exists. You can go and you can play Minecraft now. You will be able to do that when the story mode is out. But this is something completely different. It's
absolutely
supposed to be the same. If it was the same, it would have no reason to exist.
And it's Telltale
will take it and give it some sort of, I think, a good storyline. What do they have to work with, really? I mean, it's a blank canvas, so they can go anywhere with this. But I think they'll tie it together really well because they have a good history.
My point, my point really is that like I feel like a story mode, like a story-driven Minecraft, would work a lot better, like more like an Elder Scrolls game rather than a point and click. Am I completely alone in thinking that maybe a point and click isn't the best option for Minecraft?
No, you're not alone. Most people are saying that, but for me, I'm just saying that it's fresh to them. It's fresh. Really, it's an idea that I never would have conceived myself, and that's why I'm intrigued by it rather than repulsed by it.
But
if I could sit there and think to myself, wow, it would be awesome if Minecraft was basically Skyrim. Well, sure, that'd be great, but then you already have Skyrim and you already have Minecraft.
Yeah, but if they mesh them together, it would be interesting. But that's not my point. My point is I feel like Telltale has got a free pass for a long time at this point of making the same game with different skins. They made the Homestar game, they made Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, Borderlands, fucking Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, and they're all basically so similar because they're just standard point and clicks with 5 episodes each, and they're just getting away with pretty much making the same game over and over again, and I'm hoping that Minecraft brings something new to the table. Sort of the way that, and I will say Walking Dead brought something new to the table, but every game after Walking Dead kind of felt like it was just trying to be Walking Dead.
That's fair. It's fair to hope that they will bring something new to that, and I honestly think they will. I think that there will be more creative freedom than maybe people are assuming right now. I understand that Minecraft fans are not the audience that want to be kept on rails. I can totally understand that. You want freedom, but if you want full freedom, you still have it with your original Minecraft game. So
absolutely, and they are taking some of our freedom away in the Minecraft universe by giving us a story mode, but I don't think that that's limiting the universe at all.
No, I just don't understand where the problem lies with a franchise just trying to expand itself.
Exactly. I
have no problem with that.
I completely agree. I think I might try it out. It's The only thing I don't like about Telltale is I don't like when they, like, I don't like that they release all their games episodically. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. That's bullshit. It should be stopped.
I usually wait till all five episodes are done, and then they just release it on a disc. That's what I did with Walking Dead, and that's what I'll do with Game of Thrones. I haven't tried Game of Thrones yet, but I'm going to wait till all five episodes are done, and they just put it on.
Yeah,
that is
annoying. I agree.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, it's not a TV show. It's a fucking video game. Like, come on now.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about digital sales for a moment here. Nintendo and Iwata, is that, am I saying, that's right? Iwata? Yeah,
I believe so, yes.
Iwata has come out and said that Nintendo will no longer be doing digital discounts on their games that can be bought retail. For instance, like, if you go onto the Wii U shop and you see Super Smash Bros. On the Wii U shop, it's going to be the exact same price than you would find in a Walmart or an EB Games. No matter what. No sales, no discounts, nothing ever. I think this is a problem. I think this is a dumb choice on their behalf, because let's take a look just for a moment here at the wild success of Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus.
Okay. Do you even really need to expand on that? You will, I'm sure. But really, I think anybody who's ever had a PlayStation 3 or 4 or an Xbox 360 or an Xbox One already knows, if you don't have those services, what's your excuse?
Yeah,
it's free shit every month or every couple weeks.
I have both. I have Xbox Live and I have PlayStation Plus on my 360 and my PS3, and those are great. And maybe not, I don't turn on my PS3 every month and pick up a game. And to be fair, I am a big physical owner of a game. You know, I like to own a game. So I almost take the Games for Gold and PlayStation Plus as like a renting service. If I see a game that I've heard is pretty good, I'll download it, play it for 4 hours, and then say, you know what? Yeah, this is good enough to purchase.
Well, that's also a good, that's a good review for the service then. That means,
absolutely.
Those games are generating more money through people like you who will go out and pony up even more cash for a game that you could have for free just to have it in physical form.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And what I like about so much about that is that if you download the game onto your PS3 through PS Plus, let's say, and I'll give you an example that's real. This is actually an example that happened to me. I played 4 hours of Tomb Raider on there, and then I said, you know what, yes, I'm going to go out, I'm going to buy this. I went out, I bought Tomb Raider, I came home, I put it in, and my save file was still there. So yeah. I could just continue from there. It wasn't attached to the actual file. And I don't know, there's just so much that I like about that style, like the loyalty rewards programs, you know? It's free shit. Yeah, I pay a fee, but ultimately, I'm making more than I'm spending.
Exactly. And so what is it Nintendo hopes to do to circumvent them not offering a service like that?
Well, and it's not just that. It's the fact that not only do they not offer loyalty rewards service where they, you know, give you discounts and free games, they're not discounting their games ever, which...
Yeah, it's a pretty awful thing to say to your consumers.
Yeah, it's basically...
He's saying basically, from what I've read, he's said that he's going to provide some sort of reward or benefit for people purchasing games digitally, and people will get extra things or something like that. It will be a rewards program, but basically there won't be any discounts on top of it. And I don't quite understand what he's going for there.
I think the idea is that when Nintendo makes a game, they're not selling, like, with a lot of the Xbox 360 and PS3 and PS4, Xbox One games, they'll make a collector's edition, they'll have a tin, it'll come with a statue. Nintendo doesn't try and sprinkle that shit on, they don't need a collector's case. They know that what they're selling is not aesthetic, it's fucking software. That's all that it is. And they think that their software, whether you purchase it online or whether you purchase it in the form of a disc, should be the exact same price. I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't agree with it, but what I'm trying to get a grasp on right now is
Iwata is saying you're going to get rewards for buying digital games.
Yep.
And I'd really like to know more about that. And I don't think really we've got much information on what that's going to entail.
Now,
it could be interesting. Maybe it could be the greatest thing. You never know. We don't know enough about it yet, but my gut reaction is bad plan. They should be doing discounts.
Yeah, and even if they do have a loyalty rewards program, you know, planned for the future, just keep your mouth shut until then. Don't come out and be like, we're not giving you guys any discounts, so, but, like, don't worry, it'll be fine soon. Fuck you, asshole.
Yeah, what's my motivation to buy a game digitally right now? You
yeah,
know?
I do have a lot of digital games on my Wii U. I've got about 15 of them. But now, after he said that, I don't see any incentive to buy a game digitally if I could go out and buy it at the store and have the case.
Yeah.
If it's the same price. I always
exactly. There's no reason then.
Yeah, the only reason, like, the only, like, big game that I have on my Wii U, because I've got, like, a bunch of little games, right, like, Shovel Knight and, like, Ollie and, like, Guacamelee and stuff like that, but the only really big game I have downloaded is Super Smash Bros. I don't actually own that physically, but the only reason I have that is because at the time, I was living in a part of the country, I was living in a very small town, I couldn't go out and get the game, and I wanted it right at midnight, so...
Yeah.
I got
that's the benefit of our digital age.
Absolutely.
Also, you can get it anywhere, anytime, and you can also be lazy if that's your reason. But
absolutely.
Anyway, yeah. So I think we both give a thumbs down to the no discounts thing right now.
What are you doing, son? What are you doing? So in an interview this week, Nolan North might have accidentally revealed The Last of Us 2.
He absolutely did reveal it.
Hundo!
I don't even know if it was accidental. If you read it, he says in the quotes, I know they're doing The Last of Us 2.
Well, of course he knows.
Well, thanks, buddy.
Of course he knows. He fucking voices a character. And, like, when voicing has got to be, like, one of the first things you do because you have to understand exactly the speed that the sentences need to be said in order to animate mouths in a specific way. So,
well, the thing about him, though, is I don't think he's actually going to be involved in Last of Us 2, as far as what I've read here. So, what is it? He's just kind of like, well, I'm not going to be involved, so fuck those guys. Like, what?
It's also just possible, like, at this point, it's just possible that he's speculating. You know, that he thinks, okay, the game sold 8 million units, why wouldn't they? So I'm just going to say, yeah, of course they would make that. Why wouldn't they, you know? So it's possible Nolan North is speculating here. I think he might have an insider tip.
I believe that it's coming. I also, just to go along with this whole Last of Us discussion, I don't think that it needs a sequel. I played the game, as I was saying last time. It doesn't need a sequel. It was great, an amazing game, one of my favorite games now. It didn't need a sequel. Won't need
now,
a sequel.
Without giving...
Money is the only reason to give it a sequel.
Without giving away spoilers, do you think that the way the game ended was satisfactory? Do you think that...
Absolutely it was. Also, I wouldn't want any more expansion onto that ending. And if Nolan North is to be believed, it's not going to be the same characters anyway. But still, I just feel like that's cheapening the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Like... Leave it on its own. Last of Us doesn't need a sequel. But then again, if it gets one, which it probably will, I'll buy it.
But you have to remember, too, is that I'm sure there's lots of great games in history where people are like, that doesn't need a sequel. Like Mass Effect. I bet you a lot of people looked at Mass Effect and said, that doesn't need a sequel. And fuck, am I glad that they ignored me. Because Mass Effect 2 is eons better.
It is. But I think it's different with Last of Us because the story is so final.
Feeling. Okay.
To me it felt final anyway. I can't give away any spoilers.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense. But I feel like there is a lot of people who would just say, that game doesn't need a sequel. Like for instance, when I was done Arkham Asylum, I said, that game is perfect. Don't fuck with it. Don't make a sequel. But I'm glad they did. I mean, I don't love Arkham City,
Out comes three sequels.
Yeah, out comes fucking three sequels. And I haven't played Arkham Knight yet, but from what I understand, it's the best of all four of them.
That's definitely what I've heard.
I've heard nothing but good things. That'll be one of the first ones I get when I get a PS4 in the distant future. I don't know when.
Probably not a bad idea.
So poor. But this week, something kind of funny happened. A guy on Imgur found what looks to be an original... an original prototype for the Nintendo PlayStation.
Yeah, and boy, oh boy, does it ever look like a Nintendo PlayStation.
Okay, so for anybody...
Like what I would expect.
So for anybody who doesn't know what this is that basically Nintendo had a deal with Sony. They were going to make an add-on for the Super Nintendo, and they were going to, you know, make it called the Nintendo PlayStation, and you could play disc games, but you could, there would also be a cartridge for Super Nintendo games. And Nintendo basically said, nah, Sony, fuck you. We're giving all of our properties to Philips.
Yeah, they got suspicious of Sony is what happened there, because Sony would have all the manufacturing rights to the discs themselves, and they have way too much stock in the system, I guess, and Nintendo was like, we can't trust these guys. So they went with Philips. We know how that went.
Oh.
Whereas Sony just, okay, well, fuck you. We're going to take all the hardware and software that we've built for this thing, and we're going to make our own machine. And so Nintendo gave birth to their own prime competitors, and eventual, I would say, the competitor that pretty much kind of puts them in their place.
Yeah, absolutely. The PlayStation, PlayStation 1 outsold the N64.
Let me just talk a little bit more about the prospect of this Nintendo PlayStation.
Okay.
And what Nintendo really did to themselves. Nintendo PlayStation would have featured, or the Nintendo or Super Nintendo CD add-on, whatever you want to call it, would have featured Secret of Mana was originally planned to be on that system. There were several others that were originally supposed to be on that system and greatly enhanced by that system.
I'd imagine Chrono Trigger as well, because they had to install it.
Yeah.
There were certain games like Chrono Trigger and Super Mario RPG where they had to install a chip.
Yeah, yeah. Super Nintendo couldn't have them. Probably prime candidates.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you'll never know how much better those could have been. Also, the amount that affected the N64 can't even be measured, because
fucked themselves.
That Nintendo was still going. If Nintendo was still going with cartridges for some reason with the N64, which is a horrible, horrible decision. If they had just stuck it out with this CD add-on and released it everywhere in the world, maybe they would have had more confidence in the CD. And maybe, Final Fantasy VII wouldn't have been – it was supposed to be released for the N64. Let me just get that out of the way.
As was Metal Gear Solid.
Maybe they would have been able to actually house that game on the N64. Then maybe the PlayStation wouldn't have kicked their ass.
I'm gonna say something.
But don't cut me off now.
All right.
I'm kind of on a bit of a rant here.
You're on a roll.
I'm gonna get back to Mother. There was supposed to be an Earthbound sequel that was going to come out for the N64, but guess what? That cartridge-based console couldn't hold enough data for that game to be fully realized, so it was scrapped. So we were robbed. Potentially, we were robbed of that game, which would have been a 3D Earthbound-esque game in that series. Because Nintendo basically told Sony to go fuck themselves and went with Philips.
Here's the thing. If Nintendo had kept their ties with Sony and released the Nintendo PlayStation, Nintendo might not be in trouble. Not as much as they are. I don't think Nintendo's in trouble by any means, of course. They've got so much money in the bank. But what I mean to say is that I don't think Nintendo would be losing the console war so badly.
No, they absolutely wouldn't be.
They would still be on top of the world.
Think about this. If Sony and Nintendo were partners right now, and the PlayStation 4 and Wii U were kind of running together, imagine that potential.
That would be amazing.
And then the only real competitor is Microsoft. Imagine how much they'd get crushed.
Oh,
by that kind of a partnership.
Nintendo and Sony's partnership would destroy Microsoft.
Like the Xbox. The amount that little screw-up did to the gaming industry, it can't even be measured.
Xbox
wouldn't have even taken off.
I don't even think the 360 would exist.
Well, you can't – I don't know if we can go that far. It might have, but I don't know. I just think that that's a strange alternate reality that we could be living in.
Well, then the president of Sony came out, and he was like, he looked at the pictures, and he was like, I could tell you whether or not this is or isn't actually a Nintendo PlayStation prototype, but that wouldn't be very much fun. And he left it at that. What an asshole.
That's because it is one. Come on now. Yeah. Just look at it. It's like a Super Nintendo just had sex with a PlayStation and they fucking popped out a baby.
It's gotta be, dude. It looks so much. I also like that it has like the volume on the console. I always found that very strange. It was like sort of like a 90s PC thing as well, like Windows 95 computers. You could turn up the volume on the console rather than on the TV or the monitor.
It's an interesting design, and it's pretty.
I would have loved to see how it worked. I would love to see if that prototype works. That's
we'll never know, man.
I want to see them put a fucking Super Famicom cartridge in there and be like, all right, let's rev this bitch up. Let's play Chrono Trigger in, like, crazy HD. I don't even know if it would change the graphics at all.
Probably not.
Now, we were talking about Pokemon a little bit earlier. We're going to go back to Pokemon for a second here because the president of the Pokemon Company says that Pokken Tournament could come to the West as a Wii U port.
Tekken is molding into a Pokemon experience now.
Absolutely. Pokken Tournament, it's already out in Japan, in arcades in Japan. I guess arcades are still, like, hella popular in Japan. I don't know what happened to the arcades in North America. They kind of fizzled out, but
yeah, I think it's interesting, but I'm not super psyched.
Japan has, like, Mario Kart in arcades. It's got Luigi's Mansion in arcades. There's a bunch of stuff in Japan I would like to check out. But let's actually talk about Pokken Tournament.
Yeah, I'm not really all that enthused for it. It looks interesting. I saw the trailer. It was like a minute-long trailer.
A
couple Pokemon duking it out, but it just, you know.
It looks like Tekken. It looks like Tekken mixed with Pokemon. But here's the thing. I think it looks fucking awesome, dude. I think it looks great. I would love to play a game like this.
I kind of would, but then I don't know. The idea of just a straight-up fighting game featuring Pokemon doesn't really pop to me. It's just like, okay, Pokemon fight already.
I don't know. That's sort of when I was a kid, I remember playing Pokemon, and like you let's say for instance you got Blastoise out, you choose Surf, and then like a little animation comes across the screen, but you never really actually see the Pokemon fighting. And that's why when Pokemon Stadium came out, I was like, oh, this is amazing. It's gonna be so good. It's gonna be the Pokemon fighting. And then it kind of wasn't. It was you choose Blastoise, you choose Surf, you see a little animation. Yeah, it's better than the Game Boy version, but you don't really see much. Whereas this is full on beating the fuck out of each other.
Yeah, that part of it is awesome. I'll agree with that much. But at the same time, I want to know what sort of extensive features this game's going to have. If it's going to just be a straight-up fighter, then I'm not really that interested. If it's just like a tournament brawler.
Well, I think as of right now, it is just a tournament brawler. But if they ported it to the Wii U, they'd have to add things.
What I'd like to see would be more. It's kind of got some RPG elements, whereas you can maybe level up your Pokemon through those fights.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would interest me.
Then I'd be hooked. But it's just as a regular fighting game, I don't know how enthused I am, personally. But I was never a big Tekken fan either, so
Tekken, I feel like that's probably it's like the third wheel. You got Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, and those are the fighting series, dude. And then
they got Tekken.
And then Tekken's just
strangely enough, was mostly involved with Sony and the PlayStation. Just kind of a little tie-in there.
Fun fact, the only Tekken game I own, is Street Fighter X Tekken, and only because it's Street Fighter.
Yeah, got nothing to do with Tekken.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't buy it if it was just Tekken. I bought it because it was fucking Street Fighter X Tekken. Like, that's how you say that title. It's Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
X Tekken.
Fuck Tekken.
fuck Tekken. Absolutely. I don't know. Tekken to me, it's not that great of a games of a fighting series, but I feel like Pokken could really stand its own in the fighting industry. But you have to be a fan of Pokemon, which is kind of alienating your audience a little bit, but I don't think that much, because you will get fighter fans coming to play Pokken, and it probably won't be that great of a fighter, but as a Pokemon game, Pokemon fans will come and they'll love it. It's the same sort of thing with Hyrule Warriors or Pokemon Conquest. You know, like with Hyrule Warriors, Zelda fans will come and play it, dude, but Dynasty Warriors fans will be like, oh yeah, that's kind of boring. Why the fuck? Why are they doing this to my series? And, like, Pokemon Conquest fans, like, as a tactics game, it's not that great. But as a Pokemon game, it's expansive. It's more expansive than ever before.
Well, it was, yeah, I can see your point. You add some elements, new elements to a series, and some people are definitely going to not like it, whereas other people are going to, they're going to naturally like it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting, because we were talking earlier about the Minecraft thing. Same kind of deal. I guess they're just taking the series to yet another dimension.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Through a lot of them.
We were talking about this earlier with Pokemon. How many side games are we going to fucking get here, you know? Like, we got Pokemon.
As much as they can do while they're still making money, which means an endless supply.
We've got Pokken, and then in the fall, we got Mystery Dungeon, and I'm sure at some point they're going to make another fucking Pokemon Shuffle game that I think they just made one for the 3DS.
Well, yeah, they did. They released the one that was on mobile, because the one on mobile was so goddamn successful that it heralded them to create one that was just on the DS, or 3DS, rather.
Yeah. But
they're still making boatloads of cash.
I don't remember if it was earlier this year or later last year, but they also released Pokemon Trading Card Game on iOS.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many side games, and it's like, I'm glad that you're making side games, and I'm glad that people are still interested in Pokemon as much as they are, but why don't we take all of that focus from, like, all 9 of these teams that you've assembled to make fucking Pokemon side games and just make a Pokemon game? I will say
they're still making good Pokemon games, though.
Of course they are, and I will say, of all the Pokemon side games, I've never actually played one, but I like the idea of the Mystery Dungeon series.
It's interesting. I played them. They're decent.
Yeah, I feel like those are games that I would play.
I can say.
I feel like those are games that I would play. Now let's talk one of my favorite series of all time. Let's talk Star Wars. So, basically, they're making a game. I believe it's Naughty Dog is making a Star Wars game that's sort of got the same sort of physics as Uncharted, and they're going to be toting a lot off of Star Wars 1313. Now, if you don't know much about Star Wars 1313, that was the game, the big game that LucasArts was making when Disney bought out LucasArts, and then immediately Disney trashed Star Wars 1313.
Well, I just have to point one thing out quickly. It's actually a former Naughty Dog employee that has joined on with Visceral Games. It's not Naughty Dog isn't actually working on it. It's somebody from.
So it'll feel Naughty Dog-esque.
Yeah, yeah. Amy Hennig is her name. She was the creative director for the Uncharted franchise, so it will definitely still have a lot of that feeling to it. So your point is still.
It's still valid,
yes.
Absolutely. I think that could be really good, but then another thing comes to mind, and the fact that Disney is kind of a company who knows what they're doing, and if they took a look at Star Wars 1313 and said, this isn't worth our time, what was wrong with it, you know? Something must have been fucked up with that game. Maybe it towed it on the Star Wars universe a bit too much, but they still let the Old Republic fly, and they're still making expansions for that.
I honestly don't know, man. This is one of those things where I'm drawing a blank. I think it's interesting in that there's going to be a game that's going to be single player oriented. Whereas there's also going to be a great Star Wars multiplayer game coming around the same time, a little bit earlier. But it's good to see that there's going to be a lot. If you're a Star Wars fan, there's going to be a lot to be excited about.
What I'm hoping is that it's kind of like Mass Effect, you know, kind of like you can say that Knights of the Old Republic is kind of like Mass Effect, and it is. But I hope that it's like. I hope it's like Mass Effect in the way that it actually plays, rather than the like the sort of turn-based type style that Knights of the Old Republic has, where you have to where you're still running around.
I get what you mean. Yeah.
Sort of like the later Final Fantasy games.
I think that would be a good idea, but I honestly think it will be just as we were thinking, probably more in the realm of like the Tomb Raider reboot games, the Uncharted games, stuff like that.
If you're gonna make a big Star Wars game, let me explore the universe. That's kind of what I'm worried about, is that it's literally just gonna be like Tomb Raider and Uncharted, where
I'm expecting it to be pretty linear, but
yeah, that's what I don't want. I want a game that's big. I want a game that's expansive.
Well, yeah, but you'll sort of be getting that in a way with the Battlefront game. I mean, it's not gonna be like a role playing experience, I guess.
That's more of just like an arena shooter type game it doesn't even have single player. Don't get me wrong, I think it looks great and I'm gonna play the shit out of Battlefront, but it is really just an arena shooter. I can't actually explore the universe. I can explore different aspects of the universe, but not the universe.
Yeah, I totally get what you mean, and I'm with you on that. I hope that it is pretty expansive. The Uncharted games have had some of that element to them. They're not completely linear. I mean, you can go off and do whatever for a little bit. I mean, it is sort of on rails, but at the end of the day, I just think that it's good that there's multiple things coming out for Star Wars fans.
Oh, yeah. Star Wars fans have nothing to complain about right now, because there's so much shit. And they're announcing more as we speak at San Diego Comic-Con. As well, we got that Han Solo. We got that Han Solo movie has been announced. It's coming out in 20. Here's the thing: they announced that yesterday, and they're like, Han Solo movie. And I saw the headline, and I was like, oh, dude, fuck, no way, that's gonna be crazy. And then I clicked on it. It's like set to be out in May of 2018, and it's like, okay, call me in 2017. I won't give a shit until then.
Dude, who's gonna be playing the character?
I don't know. That's something I'm worried about. Like, I feel like it's possible that it could be Chris Pratt, but like, I feel like it's, we've kind of got him for everything now.
he can't fill in for every old actor.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, it'll be interesting to see moving forward, and I'm excited to play the Star Wars game, whatever it is. I have no idea. I'm sure we'll see. I feel like we'll see more of it at next E3, E3 2016. This is when we'll learn a little bit more about this Star Wars game. So let's do our retro flashback. Each week we take a look back on a game, and I got to choose last week, and Tristan got to choose this week, and Tristan, I like it almost 100% on purpose, chose a game that he knows full well that I fucking hate so much. You asshole.
How could you ever hate it?
Oh, it's so fucking garbage. Okay, we're talking about Duke Nukem 3D. We're talking about Duke Nukem 3D here, and like, I do have a lot to say about Duke Nukem 3D.
All right, I'll let you unload. I don't understand how anybody could hate this game.
I downloaded the game. As a game, it's fine-ish. You know, it does feel like it's trying to piggyback off of Wolfenstein and Doom, which are two of my favorite games of all time.
I'm going to have a counterpoint to that in a bit.
Okay, all right, just let me go off. I also think that a character like Duke Nukem is really dangerous. It's a really dangerous character to give to kids, especially in a time when Duke Nukem now...
Just let me go.
All right, let me say my point. Don't interrupt me, motherfucker, okay?
All right.
With later games in the Duke Nukem franchise, it could work a little bit better, like Duke Nukem Forever and, you know, the ones that came out on the Nintendo 64, because you were able to give them a fucking rating! M-rated! Duke Nukem 3D came out on PC, that was before this rating bullshit happened.
This is an impossible game.
You ready? Are you listening, or are you just gonna keep fucking interrupting me, okay?
Alright, go
this
on.
This is why it's dangerous, because they give you the ultimate movie badass, and that's the point, right? That's even why, like, there's a film reel at the bottom of the screen every time you die and you can rewind. It's supposed to be like a movie. He's an action star. He's cool. He's got the sunglasses. He's got biceps. He fucking, you know, he kills aliens. He says awesome one-liners. And then what does he do? He is sexist as fuck. And that's why it's so dangerous.
Because
no, in 1995, you like with Grand Theft Auto, with like people are like, oh, what about Grand Theft Auto? That's dangerous too. No, it's not. And here's why. Because from the moment you're born, you are 100%, no matter who your parents are, taught that killing people is bad, stealing is bad, and hurting people is bad. Whereas sexism, that's a choice that you get to make on your own, whether or not that's acceptable behavior or not. And kids are playing this, and they're seeing this awesome guy being very sexist towards women, you know, treating them like objects, and that's why I think it's so dangerous, because these kids can see this and be like, oh, he's really cool. Maybe if I treat women like garbage, and I'm sure in 1995, plenty of kids fucking did, at like went to school and started spouting off Duke Nukem Forever, or not Duke Nukem 3D one-liners, and they got in shit, because it's fucked up to say shit like that. And Duke Nukem teaches you that that is cool. And do you understand? Do you understand what I'm saying here?
All right, whoa, calm down here.
All right.
First of all,
I've unloaded.
First of all, holy crap, man, that was.
All right, I want to hear your counterpoint.
Necessarily passionate and loud.
I fucking hate this series. I hate it.
I'm talking strictly from gameplay aspects here. First of all,
as far as gameplay goes, it's fine.
All right, so Duke Nukem 3D, the thing that I have always defended about it, first and foremost, is about Duke the character. Duke Nukem the character. Awesome. The reason why Duke Nukem the character is great
is not
because of his attitude or any of the things he says or any of the things that he stands for. It's the fact that he is, in fact, a character. You can identify with him. Whereas with Wolfenstein and Doom, who are you? You're some jarhead.
Okay.
You don't have any personality.
All right, I'll give you that. This was the first person shooter.
If you're looking at it through the lens of a person who's not going to take it too seriously and get offended by it, Duke Nukem himself is just a funny caricature. I'm not going to go out and do the things that Duke Nukem does. I'm not going
to
say
that.
Yeah,
but you have
Duke
to understand, you're not a kid in 1995.
I was.
And you think that nobody went out and was sexist and is to this day.
That's up to them. That has nothing to do with the game.
Okay, I understand that. I get it. It's reflective of the person. All right, I feel you there.
What I'm saying here is it gave me a laugh. That charisma that character had, to me, even as a kid, I was playing it back in 1997.
Okay.
It just drew me in because it was like, this guy's doing things I can't do. He's saying things and doing things I can't do. I'm just nerdy little kid. I don't have a girlfriend at that point. I've never had a girlfriend at that point. And he's going around. He's getting all the chicks. It was just cool. That was one of the cool things about being a kid in the 90s, is there were things like that around. You could escape into this risque kind of world, and you were still a kid, but you could kind of feel like an adult for a little bit.
Okay. And,
we're getting off the topic here, really.
All right, we're really not. We're talking exactly about the game. Now,
the game itself is basically taking straight from the Wolfenstein and Doom engine.
Absolutely. But one thing that I want you to admit right here, there's two things I want you to admit on this podcast. Number one, the N64 port was garbage.
It was.
It's a terrible fucking game. You needed a memory pack, and it didn't work all the time. It was garbage. But number two thing that I need you to say to me right now is I need you to tell me that this is outdated as fuck.
The game is outdated, but it wasn't at the time. I think it's unfair to look at it that way. If you're looking back on anything, I could tell you right now Final Fantasy VI is one of the greatest games, a masterpiece, one of the greatest games ever made. But is it outdated? Oh, no, it's outdated.
No, fucking no, it's not.
Yeah,
what?
It is. You want to know why it's outdated and how you can see that it's outdated? Because games don't get made like that anymore.
No, because that's a totally different concept. I mean the actual concept of the game, not the game itself in the way that it plays. I'm talking the concept of the game and the character.
You're talking the character of Duke Nukem being outdated.
Completely.
Yes, he is.
That's why Duke Nukem Forever bombed.
I want you to look. Yeah, well, that's one of the many reasons why.
It's a shitty game.
But I honestly want to point out that at the time he was cutting edge. at the time, and nobody had experienced anything like that before. At the time, all you had were jarheads with no personality. So what he was just a at the time, he was a refreshing sip of ice cold beer on a hot summer's day. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, I guess, but I don't know. With Doom and Wolfenstein, I always felt like you didn't need to know who the character was because I was the character, you know? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was in Doom. I went to Mars. I went to hell. I fucking killed the Nazis. I did that. Whereas with Duke Nukem, I'm not as sucked in because every few seconds I'll just be killing somebody and then I'll hear, cool, and it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. But that, to me, was what was so awesome about it, because no other game did that, man.
All right. I'll give it to you.
And it was, to me, I don't think I would find it funny now if I was just introduced to it now. But to somebody back then of my age, I felt like it was hilarious. I didn't go out and start saying stupid things and mean things to anybody. Or do anything.
But I feel like there probably were kids, because kids are impressionable in that degree in what they say. So I think there probably was kids who did go out and they did say some shit.
Right, but as far as Duke Nukem goes, I feel like it was a solid, if not spectacular, shooter for its time on the PC, anyway. not the N64. It introduced a lovable character at the time. I feel like, love him or hate him, he's still very important in the timeline of video games, especially shooters, because before that, like I said, there really wasn't much for first person shooter characters.
I don't know. To me,
just weren't that interesting.
As far as gameplay and first person shooters that really, you know, change the game and really introduce them in. First, you got your, I think Wolfenstein came before Doom, right?
Yes, it absolutely did.
You get your Wolfenstein, you get your Doom, and then to me, personally, it just kind of felt like Duke Nukem just came in and was like, hey, me too, you guys! Well, Doom and Wolfenstein fucking flipped their collars and were like, beat it, Square! And then...
Yeah, well, no, but... Doom and Wolfenstein were so, in comparison to Duke Nukem, were so... it's funny that you said it. Square. They were square. They were very square. They were dark. They were rigid. Whereas
Duke
Nukem was relaxed.
Motherfucker, that's called atmosphere, you dumb bitch.
Hold on a second here, though. I respect that. And they're good. They're great. But Duke Nukem was different because it was relaxed. It was just off the wall. It was zany. It was just something different. Whereas... What you're saying is, if Duke Nukem had just been, you know, standard jarhead walking around with a rifle shooting down nameless baddies, that's much better than a guy who has personality, because his personality is too risky for kids.
It's not that it's too risky, it's that it's dangerous. It's harmful. I think it's harmful.
I really don't think Duke Nukem did that much harm. It's annoying now looking at Duke Nukem Forever and thinking, wow, they thought that was still going to be fresh in 2011 or whatever.
It's the same fucking jokes, and it's like, I think I heard this one in 95, motherfucker! You know, like, I don't know.
But, yeah, you got to look at it through the eyes of somebody back then. It was something different. I'll always stand by that.
I do have a couple of good stories about Duke Nukem, though, that I'd like to share. When I was a kid, of course, my mom watched the news, of course. And we could pretty much play whatever games we want unless they made it onto the news. And Duke Nukem made it onto the news. Because, you know, parents were coming out being like, this is sexist, this is bad. You know, like they did with Grand Theft Auto, like they did with Conker's Bad Fur Day, and so on and so forth. So that made it onto the news, so we were not allowed to play it. But my neighbor had it! So we went over to my neighbor's house. And we were like, oh man, we're so bad. And there was that scene where Duke Nukem says, show me yours and I'll show you mine. You know the one, right?
Absolutely.
It's a famous scene. Well, as a six-year-old, I didn't quite know what that meant. So I said it to my mom, and and she took that, she Googled it, she found out what it was from, and found out what we were doing, and we all got in shit.
Well, okay, fair enough, but my counterpoint is, I'm out at a friend of my parents' place,
okay.
And they're elderly, these two people that were at the house of, and they have Duke on their computer. And I'm there in the kitchen where they were keeping their computer, strangely enough, and I'm playing that game right there with them in the kitchen. That's having awesome. A blast. And they didn't care. They weren't worried about it. I guess this comes down to different childhoods, but it made me feel like I was more adult than I was. Even though the content is very immature, you know, like most other kids weren't allowed to access it, and yet I was. So it became special to me through that.
We had a bunch of computer games when I was growing up,
I grew more understanding of the content through that, and I was able to process it better through being able to actually access it rather than being shielded from it.
Yeah, and sneaking around. And I'm not going to talk junk on my parents. You know, they stopped me from playing Grand Theft Auto for years. And to be honest, I guess I'm kind of glad they did. But then once I became an adult, I was like, let's fucking buy all these Grand Theft Auto games. And I love them now. Grand Theft Auto 5 is one of my favorite games of all time. Because I think Grand Theft Auto is more than people think it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's got a story. It has characters, and a lot of people are like, oh no, all you do is go around and beat the shit out of hookers, and it's like, I don't know if you played yeah. the game, you know, and all that fucking fun.
Yeah, that's just a stigma. But I mean, that's the sort of same thing. Like, there with Duke Nukem 3D, yeah, there was topless chicks tied up to pikes and whatever, tied up to posts and stuff that you needed to rescue, and they were helpless and all this stuff. And sure, that's not good. There was more to the game, I guess, but it was pretty much just a practical joke, a tongue-in-cheek game. So I can see where people could take issue with it because it wasn't deep. If anything, Duke Nukem is one of the most shallow, no-brainer kind of things. But still, I have so much appreciation for it, and I understand that you don't.
I have one more really good story about Duke Nukem that I want to tell real quick. Do you remember when Duke Nukem Forever came out, right?
Of course I do. I pre-ordered that shit for $80 in the collector's edition and immediately felt bad.
I had a friend who fucking loved it. Who loved it. What the hell's wrong with him? He used to write reviews for a website, and he gave it a perfect 10. He loved Duke Nukem Forever. He said it was perfect. And I'd read reviews that said quite the contrary. So I was like, okay, obviously this guy doesn't know. But we were really good friends, right? And we were in high school, right? And he was like, here's the dealio. Because we were trying to get him to lose his virginity at the time because he was still a virgin. He was like, if we can figure out a way for me to lose my virginity, I will buy you Duke Nukem Forever. And it was like $60 at the time. So I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it, dude. And so him and I spent days like coordinating like Facebook chats and stuff with girls and like text messaging and stuff. One day I go to his house to pick him up because we hang out like pretty much every day. I go to his house, I pick him up. He gets in my car and he's wearing like a big jacket. And it's like the middle of summer. And I'm like, dude, why are you wearing a big jacket? Out of his jacket, he pulls out Duke Nukem Forever. He drops it on my lap. And I'm like, dude? And he was like, I don't want to talk about it. And I don't know what happened. No idea. I guess something pretty terrible. But that's all he ever told me was that he didn't want to talk about it.
That's pretty weird.
That's a really good story. It's one of my faves. So this is the podcast that goes hand in hand with Impossible Gaming. We've said our bits about Duke Nukem 3D. You know how I feel about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd give that a 9 out of 10.
Fuck you. Actually, can we just go back just for like 1 second? I just want to say something about Duke Nukem 3D that I didn't really say. Is that I don't think the gameplay is that bad. I played through a little bit of it this week. It wasn't that bad of a game, but to me, after, you know, I feel like I've been spoiled kind of thing where it just kind of feels sort of like your average Halo or your Call of Duty in gameplay style, whereas Doom kind of felt a little bit more open.
But that's why it's so good, and that's why it's a landmark.
Yeah, it's a pioneer.
If games have been taking things from that game and are still using things from that game to this day, that's success.
But on another note, I feel like first-person shooters would be a lot better if more of them towed it from Doom rather than Duke Nukem 3D. Can't argue with that, motherfucker.
Yeah, but Duke Nukem 3D towed it from Doom anyway.
Hey, fuck you! All right, so Impossible Gaming...
Whatever, you're kind of talking in a circle there.
Impossible Gaming, fuck you! This week we released a brand new episode on...
We did!
On The Wizard of Oz. Ooh. I was the one at the helm this week playing the game. Oh, my...
Oh, what a merry good time it was.
What a I don't know
that
if I...
That has to be one of the worst games ever made.
Well, and there was a lot of footage. So, like... That means we played this for a long time. We played it for a very long time. And that thing...
I remember you not wanting to give in, and I remember me being very hot and passing out almost on the couch and just wanting you to give in because I was sick of the game. I was sick of the music. I was sick of the crap visuals, the crap platform detection, everything about it. I hate Wizard of Oz personally. I have no interest in it at all, so I was a little bit bored by it, to be quite honest.
I don't hate The Wizard of Oz, but it's not, like, one of my favorite movies. Like, I don't think it's as good as some people think it is. I mean, it's kind of just, like, a fun, goofy movie. But one thing I will say about the game is that I really do appreciate the bright visuals. You know, the very bright colors, I like it. I like vibrant colors in a game. That's why I like Super Mario Brothers and, like, some of the earlier Zelda games so much. It's because they're bright. Wizard of Oz was very bright. It just so happens
God.
That...
Oh, God. This is the only time in history where you're going to hear somebody mention Legend of Zelda and the Mario games in the same breath as fucking Wizard of Oz on the Super Nintendo.
No, let me get
somebody
to it.
Somebody scroll that down in the history books.
As a game, The Wizard of Oz is easily in my top five worst games of all time. It's garbage, dude. It's fucking... The controls are insane. Like, they felt like they were programmed by an insane man. Like, this insane asshole who was like, you know, like I'm gonna make some shitty controls! You know, just like, fucking put it out. And if you've seen the episode, that actually is true, that game came out 2 days before my birth, and then the CDI Zelda games came out 2 days after. That's actually true.
Man, you were the kiss of death for gaming.
What a fucking, week!
That year, man.
God damn, I apologize. Yeah. I am apologizing right now. I am apologizing for my birth week, dude. I'm so sorry, anybody who had to be a gamer on the week that I was born. You poor saps. You know, and like, here's the thing, too, is that if it were me, and I was the way that I was now, and I was a gamer at that point, I would go out of my way to ensure I had this Philips CDI before those Zelda games came out. Because I love Zelda. And I would,
God, man.
I would make sure I had that CDI so I could play this fucking game.
How much that CDI was going for at the time? I think it was somewhere around $750.
Dude,
you're going to go pony up. And that's in 1995 or 1993 or whatever year that was.
My God. But Jesus Christ. Anyway, this game, Wizard of Oz, there's a lot of fun stuff that I did with the editing. Particularly, the first thing you'll notice is I put the, there was something I kind of did with the intro that I really like that I just want to explain a little bit. Because the way I did it was that I made the whole thing sepia tone. I made it all seem like, I had film reel sound effects playing in the background. And I had the countdown, the old-fashioned countdown, and I put the entire thing into sepia tone. I aged the film a little bit, and then as soon as the title came up, The Wizard of Oz, it was that still of Dorothy opening the door, and everything was in color, because I wanted to tote back to the movie and to, like, the feeling you got in the movie when Dorothy opened that door, suddenly everything's in color. I don't think it worked as well here as it did in the movie, but that was kind of what I was going for.
Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
I like the ideas that you inject into each episode, and
I like messing with the intro a little bit when I can. Like, for instance, I changed the theme song to the Alf theme song when we did the Alf episode. You know, I like just doing little stuff like that.
Yeah, it helps every episode kind of stand on its own a little bit, and that's always good. So I felt like that was a cool addition, and really well done, actually.
And here's here,
that part.
Here's what I really want to know, though. And we're going to actually look it up because now I'm curious. Where is that company today? Where is SATA? What is
SATA?
What is SATA doing?
SATA with a T.
Yeah.
SATA.
Okay.
Where are you now?
SATA. Let's see if this even exists. Okay. It's giving me some weird things. SATA. Organization. Oh, it's a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual rights organization.
Okay. That's definitely not right. Okay. I've got it up here. Super Entertainment and Total Amusement.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at.
It's a gaming company.
They
lasted until 2009?
They were still making games. They made Project Silphied on the Xbox 360, The Legend of Golfer on the GameCube. a bunch. They made Tetris 64? Tengen was like, yeah, no, we're going to trust the makers of The Wizard of Oz. They made a bunch of Mahjong games. They made Muzia, the classic Japanese Tale of Horror. That's a pretty good game, but they only made the English version, so it's not like they actually made the game. They made, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
They had enough revenue to last until 2009.
Making games
like... They had a 25-year history, almost.
I feel like they were probably dying when they made Tetris 64, and then someone passed them Tetris 64, and they were like, here you go, and they were like, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, because we can't afford to let this company die.
Yeah.
You know, recognized for such great hits as The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't let that go.
The Wizard of Oz is, it's a classic. And for anybody who's worried after watching that episode, I didn't actually throw out my Super Nintendo. I did, however.
Oh, no, shit.
I put it in the closet for a bit. I don't know if I'll look at it again for a little bit. I might keep my distance from the Super Nintendo for a little while because I am still pretty upset about what I saw.
Yeah, kind of cheapened the whole console when you put that in there.
Absolutely, 100%.
It's like cheap horn now, you know?
Yeah.
What good is it to do?
Exactly. I don't like Link to the Past. You know, Super Metroid, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana. They all seem just like less fun now. Because, I hold the controller.
Oh, got that stink on it, man.
I hold the controller, and I remember when I was holding that exact controller playing Wizard of Oz. It's all ruined. I can't play it.
It is that bad.
No, there's no more Super Mario RPG. No more. No more fucking Final Fantasy VI. It's all Ogre and Howie. You know? I'm all through with the Super Nintendo.
Thank you, SATA Corporation.
Thank you, SATA, for ruining everything and making Tetris 64. God bless.
Yeah. So on you guys.
So I am I'm working on the last episode of the season. We've only got one more left in season 2. That makes me sad. But I am working on the last episode, and Tristan and I are starting planning for season 3. So you don't have to worry. There's not going to be that big of a what's the word I'm looking for?
There's not going to be a lull or a break.
Yeah, there's not going to be that much of a gap. It might be a month, maybe a month and a half or so. But we're going to have new episodes coming out soon. New brand new episodes from season 3. We've got some...
Yep, and we have some new ideas going into it as well. So yeah. It'll be kind of like all the same.
Yeah, we're going to try and define it as like season 3. Perfectly for season 3. So we're trying new things, all right? So be patient, you assholes. And if you haven't checked out the Wizard of Oz episode, you can check that out under Impossible Gaming at theunheardnerd.com. And while you're there, check out all the stuff that Will Harrison does. God bless that man. God bless you, Will Harrison.
Yes, God bless.
God bless. All right, so I think that's yes, God bless. I think that's pretty much where we can leave it. This episode went a little bit long today, but that's okay.
Yeah, my laptop is heating up, and it feels like it's gonna melt.
I've got a drive to do. I've got a drive to do on Saturday, so now I have something to listen to on the drive. Thank you. Thank you. God bless.
Hey, let's listen to ourselves.
Yay. Hey.
We're not narcissistic at all.
Hey, man. I've seen every episode of Impossible Gaming 10 times at least, motherfucker. Everyone. Even Dino Riki.
Oh, God, that episode.
Even Silver Surfer. Well,
Silver Surfer was pretty good.
It's all right. All right, so thanks so much for listening. Of course, as always, I am your host, Chadley.
And I'm the other guy, Tristan.
All right. Enjoy the week.
Yeah, oh yeah, the week.